A congregation is a beautiful sight. You all are a beautiful sight, and I want to savor this as it's my last time being up here preaching. And I know in particular I will remember looking out on you all as you were singing that last hymn, "When Our Heart is in a Holy Place." It's been a wonderful year here, a year of adventure for this community, and a year of learning and real growth for me personally. And it's hard to believe that it's been a year. It always goes by so fast. I went looking through my notes from when I originally interviewed for the internship with Lydia and a few lay leaders a year and a half ago, and I found this gem I wanted to share with you. So here's a little peek into my note-taking style. Change, renovation, community will feel very bonded. Community will feel very anxious. So yes, sign me up for that, I said. And it's true, in this year of adventure, there have been challenges. But each challenge is also an opportunity to lean into the bonds and the bondedness between us. It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from UU minister Reverend Mark Morrison Reed. He says, "The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all." We know this intellectually. We know that we are profoundly bound to one another. When we stop to think about it and that greater unity that we each understand in our own personal belief language or cosmological language, we are all children of God. We are all interconnected. There is no eternal, individual, abiding self. We are all part of Mother Earth. But sometimes it's harder to remember these bonds, like when we're having an argument with someone, or if we've just had a rough day and we aren't feeling the love so much for whatever reason. We can forget about the bonds and we lash out in anger, or we're just a little more snippy and passive-aggressive than we intend to be. Or even more mundanely, we just simply fall into the cycles of householding duties, of work, of raising kids, of doing all the necessary things that we must do to continue to live. And we get busy, and we aren't thinking about the bonds that bind each to all. And so, as sort of an antidote to that tendency, we join together in religious community, and we attend services in order to remind ourselves of those bonds. And we also come as a response to recognizing those bonds. Because when we see and recognize the bonds that bind each to all, that recognition calls us to community, to being with one another. And specifically, it calls us into community that enters into covenant, that makes promises and agreements about how we will be together, and stays at the table to make amends when promises are inevitably broken. Being in community takes compromise and patience. It takes discomfort. It is not always easy, but leaning into community is what can help unveil those bonds. It's like the adage about preaching. People sometimes say that preaching is the aim of preaching is to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. And sometimes creating a welcoming, comforting, safe community space for everyone, for other people, it will make some of us uncomfortable because it will ask some of us to change. But I assure you that the comfort is short-term and the long-term benefits are very much worth it. We are called to be like Anamkara to one another, the soul friend from Celtic culture. In a community, that this doesn't mean that every single person is everybody else's soul confidant. You might find one or two people like that, for sure. But what it means more to me is that the community can be a container to help people feel seen and heard and understood. And I'm going to be blunt. If you are seeing and hearing others sharing from themselves, from their most authentic selves, And this is in the context of a diverse community. And nothing about it makes you uncomfortable or asks you to shift your thinking or your behavior. Then I would say that either you didn't really hear them or your community is actually pretty homogenous. It's not actually that diverse and has mostly the same kind of people. A colleague of mine, Reverend Teresa Inez Soto, recently wrote an article entitled Beyond Pronouns. And the main point of this article is that not only do some folks prefer to use, or just use, they, them pronouns instead of masculine he, him, or feminine she, her pronouns, but some folks do not use pronouns at all because none really fit their gender identity. And I admit, I struggle with this. I struggled when I was reading it. My first reaction is, but it's too different. But pronouns are useful. They're efficient things of language. It's quicker than saying a whole name over and over again. I don't want to have to say Joe left Joe's jacket in Joe's car. That's just not how I or most of us have been trained to speak. And I will probably never be fully comfortable with that. That is, I will never get used to speaking in this way. It'll never come naturally, probably. Even if I have a friend or a congregant or a coworker who I'm speaking about and with regularly that doesn't use pronouns, I will probably never quite get it, and I'll always mess up and be a little resistant to it. But that's okay, because I want to keep working at it, because I value people being welcomed and respected and referred to, however they wish, more than I value my desire to what? Never change? To stop growing? My natural human inclination to resist change and work pales in comparison to my desire and the call that I hear to be a soul friend to others and to create that space together. Because it's really simple. If I consistently misgender somebody, if I use pronouns when they aren't applicable because they don't use pronouns, if I ignore a woman's testimony about her experiences with daily sexism and harassment, if I continue to sing songs or use language that people have told me are grounded in the gender binary or colonialism or racism, then if I just continue doing that, even though people are asking me that it's and telling me that it's harmful to them, then none of those people will ever be able to be authentic with me. They won't be able to be real with me or reveal their innermost or most authentic self without pretense or mask. And neither will I be able to connect deeply with them or share as deeply, though I may not realize it or be aware of it. And so the level of community that we can reach then can only be superficial. It can't grow into the beauty that I know true beloved community can be. Beloveds, this is vital. This is how Unitarian Universalism saves lives, if not souls. And I happen to think that it can do both. We are currently living in a society where just this week we've observed the 75th anniversary of D-Day and the victory against Nazism in Europe. And in the same week, we then have LGBT pride celebrations that have been crashed and interrupted by actual Nazis. The more forces in our society that say, you can't be who you truly are, the more I feel that we need to make it clear to everyone that we welcome them in action as well as in word. So this lays out a critical and sacred charge to our community, to any Unitarian Universalist community. We must strive to be open and welcoming, to provide a safe refuge for all, which means we must be willing to grow and to change, willing to be uncomfortable. We will never achieve true safety and belonging for all without discomfort for some. This call also means being a community oriented to the impermanent, to those just entering and those just leaving, as well as to those consistent mainstays in the community, the people who are always here. Because we know a community is not only always a work in progress, it is also always already in flux and in flow. To me, this is one of the most beautiful aspects of a congregation, this impermanence. The community gathered is different week to week, year to year. People come and go for however long they need. For some, we are a permanent home, or Unitarian Universalism is, if not this particular fellowship. For others, we are an important phase on their religious and spiritual journey. Some find this congregation as an adult because it is such a good fit with their beliefs. Some grew up here, and their beliefs and values are shaped by their time in religious education and in Sunday services. Some, like Ellen and I, are staff, here to serve and grow for a certain set of time before the next stage in our career. My time here is a little more prescripted than others, given the structure of the one-year internship, and I certainly have grown, and I have been changed for the better by you all. So thank you. And I should also add, when I was listening to Karen's words about teachers and the value and importance of teachers, it made me think of Lydia, and so I thank you for being a teacher this year. And now, we get to do some more of the work of community. In this case, the work of appreciating service and saying a goodbye. We will begin with the teacher appreciation, which means that it is time to invite the children from their religious education classes into the sanctuary, into the service with us.